Hey, this is Tom Waddle. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast brought to you by Miller Lite, the presenting sponsor of the 2020 ESPN 1000 Virtual Fantasy Football Championship.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. From State Street and the First Midwest Bank Studio, this is Waddle and Sylvie, WMVP Chicago. It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
Michael Wilbon will be great talking about the events that's gone on here in the country over the last couple of days, and really years and years and years it's been going on. And we always enjoy his company and his thoughts. Well, Waddle, he's brought to you by your guys over at Hawk.
That is correct. HawkAuto.com. Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, and VW all in one place. HawkAuto.com, where Chicagoland saves big. And I have to say real quick, I don't mean to pander to you, Mike, but when I see friends hurting, that hurts me. And I just want you to know that listening to you the last couple of days has been very moving and very important.
Well, listen, I appreciate that. I appreciate that coming from you guys who know me. We've gotten to know each other pretty damn well over the last double-digit years. And yeah, it's been a difficult. I just told a friend who was also professionally associated, because she's my makeup artist. We were just walking over, leaving between shows, between PTI and a countdown segment that's going to go on. And you know, she knows me well, as you know, here in Chicago, spend some time together. She just said, "You're not yourself." The last couple of days, I know you're not going to admit it, but I did have to admit it. And I think a lot of people are in that space, and I've had a lot of people reach out that I didn't even know that mattered to, or that they would notice. And I'm grateful for that. People from all walks of life, people of all colors and persuasions and ethnicities. And I think that there's a lot of that. I think there's a lot of that, that folks realize that people aren't exaggerating or making up the way they feel. They just down. And I don't know how it stops. Because the reactions don't make you feel good. Even your own reactions that you might have, of lashing out or expressing yourself, tough conversations, you don't feel any better. You know they're necessary, but you don't feel better. So what does make me feel better is hearing from you guys and being able to engage like this.
Michael, can you explain that to people who come from a good place but don't understand? I'm not talking from the people who are dismissive of NBA players no matter what, or you know, may have hate in their heart. I'm talking about the good people who want to know the question, what do athletes hope to accomplish here by not playing the next day or two?
Right. You have to have answers, even though we don't always have absolute answers. And what they hope to accomplish is, and I think I told you guys this when we talked about George Floyd in the aftermath of his murder, it's basically saying, you're not listening to me, you're not hearing me. And so now I've got to do something dramatic. I've got to do something that is extreme to get the attention of people who are not listening. And even if you don't agree, what you're saying is, I'm going to withhold my services, because basically all you care about are my services, whether I can play or sing or whatever the services are. I'm going to withhold them because you're not hearing me. This is much more serious than my performing for you. And that's what you tell them. I mean, and in some cases, look, I mean, the Milwaukee Bucks, those guys, I don't know if they didn't have much of a plan, because they didn't really plan it out much in advance. Boston and Toronto talked it out in advance. Milwaukee guys, they know their owner is connected in a way with state officials in Wisconsin and law enforcement officials in Wisconsin. And they were like, okay, one of the things we're going to do is leverage our position to get him to talk to the people who are in charge. The state's attorney, the attorney general, the police chief. And so these are the things that you can do. It doesn't mean that your boycotting is going to stop a person in a month from being murdered without a weapon, unarmed person of color. No, it doesn't mean that. And that's what I say to you know, some of the young athletes. Okay, you think people 20 and 30 and 40 and 60 years ago didn't think of boycotting? You think boycott? I mean, boycotting has been a means for drawing attention going back to, you know, I don't know, going back to the 19th century. But these guys have more leverage to wheel, to throw around when they say they're going to boycott. But it doesn't mean you're going to get the exact answers you want immediately. They're so young. They're so used to everything being given to them instantly. And it's like, do I think that boycotting would prevent any possible situation where an unarmed person is shot, murdered, maimed in a month? No, I don't. But you do what you can. You do what you can. And clearly, this has had an impact. When you look at baseball and the NHL, when you basically, people are saying, you know what? I hear you. And that's the first thing you hope that will happen is that people hear you.
When the discussion becomes or became whether or not to resume the playoffs or just cancel the rest of this, I thought someone on Greeny's show today had an interesting point when he talked about, he referenced Doc's emotional press conference after a game. And I think the guest, I think it was Mark Spears who said it. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that was the guest that was on who said it. And his point was, listen, if Doc makes that statement away from a post-game interview or a post-game press conference, it's not going to have the impact because you're not going to have the same number of eyeballs.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So Doc being there and giving that impassioned, heartfelt talk, the most eyeballs that can be on him are when he is meeting the press after a game inside that bubble. Do you agree with that rationale?
I more than just agree. I know that's the only logic that should be applied. Because without that post-game situation and venue, 80% of those people aren't there. They're not surrounding Doc Rivers. Where would they find him? Yeah, a handful of people are going to go to practice and talk to Doc no matter what. But not like post-game. Not in a way that mandates it become news across the country. And Doc knows that. Doc is not in favor of not playing. And he understands the anger and the desperation that would lead to that desire. But it doesn't mean he's in favor of that resolution. I mean, have I asked him that in the past, like, 3 days? No, I don't need to. I know him. We have these conversations, you know, about what we think should happen. I mean, you know, Michael Jordan was very important today in the conversations that the Board of Governors had and that the players had. Very important. You know, people talk about Michael not getting involved all the time. He's very much involved today. Very much involved. And I can tell you for a fact, Michael's not in favor of boycotting because he understands the platform. He understands holding the stage because he's held it. He's held it in a way that nobody's held it in the history of sport. So he gets what happens when you have the stage and you don't give it up. And I think, you know, a lot of function, that's largely a function of being older and having had time to examine these things, and having had time to see things both succeed and fail, to having been wrong about it earlier in your life. But you know, guys like Doc and Michael, who I know and have known for a long time, we've discussed all these things for decades. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, you know, for 30 plus years, we've talked about this stuff. And we talk about it now. It's ongoing. And so I applaud the guys in the bubble, even the ones I may disagree with philosophically, who are saying, you know what? I'm just going to sit. I'm not going to do this. I get their frustration. Now, what do we do? Now that we've established the frustration, the desperation, the desperate need to do something so that people will stop being shot, what do we do now?
And that's the question. There's so many places I want to go here, whether it's Michael or here's what I want to ask you, because you're very big on history. And you said there have been others who have wanted to boycott in the past. Do you believe like 20 years from now, 30 years from now, we will look back at this time as being a very important time on the sports landscape with the real world?
That's a great question, Chief. That's a great question. I think so. Let me not say I think so. I hope so. And this is what Tony and I talked about. We talked about this on PTI today. perhaps our most, I don't know, penetrating conversation we've ever had on camera. I think I can say that justifiably. I hope so, but look, there are a lot of people that, and you talked about, you phrased your first question this way. There are a lot of people that, whether or not they agree, they understand the situation and they're concerned about it and they express that. I'm looking at a whole bunch of people. When I turn on Fox News, I see a whole bunch of people who could give a damn. I see a whole bunch of hosts. I see a whole bunch of people who I know attract viewers who could care less about Black lives at any point in time. And I am not exaggerating. That's the other side of it. There are people who just would look at you and say, I don't care about that. They won't say it to you. They won't say it to your face. And they will often hide behind anonymity. But for the most part, they don't even hide. You know, there's a convention going on right now where they don't care about this conversation and will quickly turn it. And okay, so what does that mean? Does that mean that we're going to look back in 20 years to answer your second question now and say that this was a turning point? It's only a turning point if people want to turn, if people want to be different or do differently or see something different coming back from someone who looks different than them. If they don't care, and I am far more cynical than many people. I think while there are fewer people who don't care than ever, I think that percentage is way down. And people who are just mean and nasty and bigoted, I think there are fewer of those people than ever. I still think there's way more than most people think.
Mike, how do you feel when you find out that somebody that you know may fall into that group or somebody you thought?
That's a great question.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like,
Tommy, I have felt differently lately. Look,
I'm not asking you to name names.
What you're asking is, listen, I grapple with this every day. And Don and I talk about this every day. So, look, I live in Washington, D.C. Come on, I live in a place where your next-door neighbors have worked for very different presidents I didn't vote for. And they may be very much on the other side of the aisle. And you live with that, and you can sit, and you can go out with them, and you can have dinner, and you have barbecues backyard to backyard, and you've done all of that. I've done all that over the past 40 years. And now it's a different place. Now I just say, you know what? I'm not going to engage. We're in too different a place. Often. Not all the time. There's some people who have a philosophical difference and it's earnest, and they're trying to get to a place where there is cooperation and there's, you know, a middle ground. But you know what? I watch stuff and I go, there's no middle ground.
Is it a punch in the gut to you personally?
And I'm not talking to them anymore. I'm not engaging. And I know that's probably the wrong, that's not in the spirit that we're talking about. But when those people have their minds made up, I just don't engage. I walk away. I avoid them. I don't take their phone calls. So I'm in a place now where my desperation, my anger has led to something different in my reaction. I don't even like that reaction, guys, but that's where I am right now. That's my boycott. I'm boycotting them.
I want to ask you about Jason Hayward when we come back. He sat yesterday, and if the Cubs made the right move and how you felt about that as a Cubs fan watching the team play while he sat. That's coming up with Michael Wilbon next.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home. Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Our conversation with Michael Wilbon continues usually on Wednesdays. He's been so busy. It's great to have him on and to hear his thoughts. Michael, I didn't know when you were talking just in the last segment if you knew about Brian Urlacher and his comments today, because you were inferring about what happens when someone you know and someone you're friends with says stuff that you don't agree with and something that totally goes against what things that you believe in. So you found out during the break.
Yeah.
What Brian posted, well, and you're friends with him, and we are as well. Right here?
Listen, again, the initial question before the break, a lot of it depends on how close you are to people and what you think of their opinion. And when you don't know people well, you could just walk away from it, and that's what I have chosen to do in a great many cases. There are a couple of cases where you engage. And if I was with Brian now, and I could be because we play golf together. We've, you know, gone to dinners. Brian Urlacher is not a casual friend. He's not somebody that I can say, oh, yeah, we're friends and you're not really friends. No, we are. He and his wife and me, my family, we're friends. I would say to Brian, dude, we got to talk. Let's have a conversation. And that's what I would say. And I'm not going to try to sort of presuppose where that conversation would go, but we'd have to have a conversation. And, you know, we've had conversations where he and I will disagree. It's usually football or sports stuff or personalities, people. And usually, you know, in a lot of cases, the two of us agree. And so there's no real disagreement or no real sensitivity that's explored anyway. But this would not be that, from what I've heard, if all that stuff is accurate. So I would say, dude, we got to have a conversation. I may, when I hang up this phone, I may text him and suggest that anyway.
I think it may be beneficial for both of you, to be honest with you.
It may be. Yeah. It may be. I don't doubt that at all. Again, somebody whose life and opinions matter to me. That's not going to be the case with everybody, but in the case of Brian, it is.
Speaking on the football topic, Mike, how do you think that, what will the ripple effects be, and how will they affect those ripple effects, the NFL, and how they handle these issues as well?
Well, the NFL hasn't been on the clock. Because basketball has been front and center, and then soccer, right? And the NFL didn't have games, and their practices didn't have games, nothing. When George Floyd was murdered, didn't have anything. And yes, you saw people take to social media, but that's not the same thing as having to deal with this in a locker room, in a building, with your owner who you may disagree, with your coach who you may disagree, with the guy sitting next to you in the locker room with whom you may disagree. The NFL has not had this, and now they have it. It's thrown into their lap, too. It's not just basketball. And so, and there's going to be more pushback in the NFL. I mean, we just see, you know, I don't know how many players who have lived in NBA locker rooms. There are a few. I don't know how many would post the content to say that Brian just did it, that we've talked about.
Right.
But in football, in the football world, the football industry, it's a different place. Even though people can look at the numbers and the makeup and say it's the same, it isn't the same. It isn't the same. It's not close to the same. I covered these two leagues. I know the difference. I know the difference in the owners. I know the difference in the executives. I know the difference in all of it. And the NFL is a much, much, much more conservative place. It compares itself all the time to the military. That is, you know, conservative and stridently so. And the NBA is not. And they're just very different. I'm not saying one's better than the other. They're different. And so now the NFL's got to deal with this. And now Jerry Jones can't hide under his desk like – from now until Christmas.
Mike, you remember how quick the commissioner, who represents the owners, was to make a statement and act when Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson and other the top profile players in the league made that video. I just wonder if those same players were willing to step forward and ask for a better relationship or ask for change in a more significant way. What would happen? Because we all know, listen, we all love the NBA, but the NFL, in terms of how many people watch, the revenue that's generated, I just wonder how Roger Goodell and his group of owners would respond to something like that.
Well, you know what? You know what, Tommy? Even though it generates more money and more fans watch, it isn't nearly as impactful socially or culturally as the NBA. It just isn't, as basketball worldwide. Just because they're worldwide figures, because LeBron James and Luka Doncic, just to mention a young guy who's white, those guys are global citizens. The pro football players aren't that. Nobody wants to hear that, but they're not.
Right.
Nobody in China knows who Tom Brady is. They just don't. And that's the most famous guy in the NFL, not to mention any player on any other team. So they don't have the leverage. That's one of the things that's different about the NBA, with guys being globally impactful, global citizens, and the NFL. It's the jersey people root for. They don't know whose head or whose face is in that helmet. And those guys don't have the leverage to go to their owners and say, I'm going to demand this. Usually when you demand it in the NFL, the next thing is you trade it or cut, because your contract isn't even guaranteed. So I don't know. Now, and you mentioned truly famous people who are going to be global celebrities as the game evolves. Patrick Mahomes, a couple other people. I don't know what would happen. I mean, I think Roger Goodell, and I, you know, I got chastised for saying this yesterday. I mean this. I think Roger Goodell, and you guys know I'm not shy about criticizing Goodell. I think he's made a U-turn.
I agree.
And I think it could get him fired. I don't know that Roger Goodell will be the commissioner of the NFL by Christmas.
Wow.
Because it is clear to me that Goodell, first of all, he's made, like, how much money has Goodell made as commissioner? More than $250 million, right? And he's been making like $30 million, $30 million a year.
I think it's been 45 last year, somewhere like that.
Okay, so he's made like $300 million. He doesn't have to kowtow to anybody. I think that Roger Goodell has had a sea change. I think he's made a U-turn. For whatever reason, something struck him. Maybe it was seeing those faces. Maybe there were personal conversations in his life. Maybe there are people he knows that he sat down and had the kind of conversation I'm suggesting Brian Urlacher and I may have. I don't know what Goodell had, but I think his change is a legitimate U-turn. Now, I got friends who called me up yesterday, including one former NFL player, saying, hey, don't get crazy. You know, Goodell is being politically expedient. He knows what he's doing. I don't believe that. I believe when he came out and said what he said, I believe Goodell could take a knee, depending on where he is for the first game. During the anthem is what I'm talking about. And, again, you know, I'm not in the tank for Roger Goodell. I haven't been. But what I'm hearing to me is sincere. And so I don't know what's going to happen. But do I think that of the 30 owners, 32 owners, how many would I say, you know, are like Jerry Jones and opposed to anything that sounds like protest and come up with stuff, phony stuff like grace, and we're going to act with grace? Stop. You're going to act in your best financial interest. I think we're talking about fewer than 10, maybe 10 out of 32. Is that enough to shake the NFL like it would the NBA? No.
Michael, what did you feel about the Cubs last night? Jason Hayward sat. He told them to play, so they played. Mookie Betts sat. He told the Dodgers to play, but they sat with him.
Mookie Betts is greater to the Dodgers than Jason Hayward is to the Cubs. Even though Jason Hayward's wearing a World Series ring, and even though he was instrumental in getting that ring, he's not to the Cubs as Mookie Betts is to the Dodgers. Jason Hayward has never been, nor will he be, the most important person to walk into that room, that locker room. Betts is that now, even though he's only been there a minute and a half, just by virtue of his salary and the stature that conveys. Now, is that the only reason to support a teammate? No, it isn't. But we know the reality of this. And I don't know. I mean, I don't want to judge the Cubs. I don't know the Cubs' locker room. I don't know their locker room. I don't know what they feel about Jason Hayward. I don't know if Hayward really went to each one of them and said, I'm serious, man. Play the game tonight. I want you to play the game. Because that has impact. That has impact. But, you know, Betts could have done the same thing, and the Dodgers' reaction to him was different. But there's too much to be – I don't want to do guesswork. You know, I don't know what their relationship is. You know, my dealings with guys on the Cubs suggest to me that they're pretty stand-up, really stand-up. And I'm specifically talking about Rizzo and Bryant because they have been leaders and best players and of greater stature in that locker room, in a World Series locker room, than Jason Hayward, to be honest. And to me, they're stand-up guys. I don't want to guess what it is that they went through. I don't know what their conversation was like. So, and I wasn't paying attention to them last night nearly as much as I was to what was going on with the NBA and WNBA. Because baseball, look, they set the tone. Or if you want to talk about what sets the tone in this country in terms of athletes, in terms of people of color, in terms of what urban America feels, I mean, it's the NBA. It's NBA players, past and present. Others follow. The NHL followed. The MLS followed. Baseball followed. You knew. I said to Tony yesterday when we left the studio, I said, you know that the Milwaukee Brewers cannot play. Because the Milwaukee Brewers can't dare play a regular season game in Milwaukee while the Bucks have risked forfeiting a playoff game at a neutral site. So I knew. The Brewers, I mean, to sort of keep any standing in that community. And by the way, the Brewers might not have needed that impetus. I'm just saying that game was not coming off. But I'm not going to judge the Cubs by what happened in Wisconsin last night or with this incident. And there may be a time to come where we have to judge them, but I don't know what was said in that locker room. I don't know how Jason Hayward feels. And we'll learn more about how that dynamic and that team dynamic plays out.
Michael, great stuff as always. We listen and we learn together, and you're one of the best out there, so thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
No, listen, I appreciate you guys. Look, these are, you know, like I said, these are difficult conversations, and I've been in a bad mood, a foul mood, since this shooting again. Just when I thought I'd gotten back to a place where, you know, you can be pleasant day after day, and then I'm not. And I don't know how this is going to last much longer, because this problem, this systematic problem people talk about, this is real. Mm-hmm. Whether certain chunks of people in certain demographics choose to acknowledge it or not. And this is I said this on PTI today, I don't want to call this a war, because we don't need that. But there's a fight being waged. And that fight is over, are you hearing me? That I'm tired of people getting shot. And had a knee put on their neck. It just, and so these conversations are not comfortable. I appreciate you guys, you two specifically, being willing to and able to discuss 360 degrees of it in a way that if people are uncomfortable because they don't want to hear it, they want to hear more, you know, about wins after replacement, then turn the damn channel. Turn it to the left or to the right. Because this is much more necessary than that. And I appreciate and love you guys.
Amen.
Thanks, Michael.
Love you too, Mike.
Yeah, us too. So thank you, Michael Wilbon. Great stuff. And Chuck Garfine is going to join us next. Talk about if the White Sox have any plans. And we got to talk about their performance, too.
Yes.
Because their performance has been white hot, as I've been describing it. All that coming up next.
It's Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Before we leave today, we're going to play you video. The commissioner of baseball is under fire thanks to audio captured at a press conference, whether he was on mic or a little bit off mic, by Mets general manager Brody Van Wagenen. He was discussing a plan in which Major League Baseball wanted the Mets to take the field, leave it, and return an hour later. Van Wagenen is critical of the idea in the video, and Commissioner Rob Manfred saying he just doesn't get it. People are calling for Rob Manfred to resign. We'll play you that audio coming up here before 6 o'clock. Let's talk though some White Sox with Chuck Garfine from NBC Sports Chicago. Hey, have the Sox done anything in the last 10 days or so?
Oh man, they've done everything. I mean, imagine this in the last 10 years, or 10 years, in the last 10 days, back to back to back to back home runs. You had Jose Abreu hitting 4 home runs in 4 at-bats. Sylvie, I hate to bring that up because it came against your Cubs.
I know. It happened, though.
Yeah, it did happen. You had, I'm trying to get the numbers straight, 6 home runs and 5 home runs. So 11 home runs, I believe, as a team in 2 days. And then you had the no-hitter by Lucas Giolito. So you couldn't dream this up, and yet it has become a reality for the White Sox. And there is just something going on. Now, you can go on a losing streak and, you know, you can seasons go in a lot of different directions. But I'd like to think that this team is going to be able to take what has happened in the last 9 days and carry it forward into the playoffs and be dangerous, because there's just too much on this team, too much talent and too much of a thing that exists. It's a real thing. And in a shortened season, I'm feeling really good about where this is going.
By the way, Chuck is brought to you by Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. Text Tito to 31996 now to win a Tito's prize pack, which includes a Tito's golf bag, a Tito's cooler, and more. That's Tito to 31996. Chuck, personally, as a White Sox guy, what did you enjoy more? Did you enjoy the Giolito no-no more, or did you enjoy all the dingers that they sent out of the park on the north side?
I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at that. For Lucas Giolito, I'm thrilled for him. This is someone who was the worst starting pitcher in baseball 2 years ago, and now is one of the best. We saw what he did last year. And then for it all to come together in such a fashion in one game against the Pirates and throw a no-hitter and put his name in the record books. And he even said he thinks he knows he can pitch better. And this was on his bucket list, to throw a no-hitter. And he put in all the work. And he's a great lesson for so many of us that when things aren't going good, in fact, when things are going really, really bad for you, you can turn your life around. And that's what he did on the baseball field. And then you look at all those home runs. That was special, you know. It really lit a fire with the team. And they needed a good season, a good series against the Cubs, because they hadn't really beaten anybody good. That was a good team that they faced, and they almost swept them. And if it wasn't for Yu Darvish and a one-run loss to the Cubs, we'd be talking about a 10-game winning streak right now for the White Sox.
I wanted to ask you about what happens here at the trade deadline, if anything. This is really, really different. And normally, if the White Sox would have shown this in a 162-game season, you would bet that Rick Hahn would be reinforcing maybe the starting staff with another starter, especially with an expanded playoffs. But we just don't know what the future holds, Chuck. Do you believe there is a move to be made for Rick Hahn to make this team better this year?
Well, it's really tough to answer that. You know, I normally have a pretty good idea of what might happen. This year, all thoughts, predictions, and bets are off the table because there's just too much unknown. Too much has to happen for a trade to actually go down. Now, we are starting to see a couple of trades here, so that gives me a little bit of hope that they might do something. I was wondering a couple of days ago that, you know, hey, with we don't know about Nick Madrigal's return, although it sounds like he's getting closer, but they have not found anyone to replace Larry Garcia, so I was thinking they could probably pick up a utility guy, and sure enough, it sounds like they're striking a minor league deal with Yomer Sanchez, so that might fill that void. The starting pitching situation is, well, there's Dane Dunning, who had one good start, and we're not sure when he's going to start again. There's Lopez is back. There's Gio Gonzalez. And then would they really make a big move for a rental? I don't think that's in the cards. But I will say this. Like, I think Rick Hahn kind of alluded that they're not going to make any kind of short-term move. But this is, you know, the sports fan talking here. This is the media member talking here. If you have a chance to win a World Series, whether it's in 2020, 2021, 2022, you go for it. If they are going to continue to play like they have been playing, this team can win a World Series. And if you have a chance to do it, you can't be like, well, you know what? I'm not going to make a move for this year to make me better. Let's worry more about 21, 22, 23. I, as a fan, if I was running a team, I would consider to go down that road of what can we do to make our team better, even if it's only for this year, because there is something going on with this team that I believe in, and they might be able to do it even here in 2020 because all bets are off.
Chuck, off the field, do you expect the Sox to address what is going on in our world today? Obviously, they played early yesterday. They had the day off today. Other teams have canceled games, postponed games. The NBA has led the way along with the WNBA. Do you expect the White Sox to make a team statement?
I would not be surprised. Now, Lucas Giolito spoke today, and he's such a smart, mature 26-year-old. And he said, look, I'm not going to stick to sports. I know that's a big thing that's out there in our world. We are on the front lines of it, you guys and I. Like, our fans want us to stick to sports. These are not normal times. And Lucas Giolito acknowledged that. And he has admitted that he has grown up in a life of privilege. And he was able to just put the blinders on all this time and just do his thing. Do his thing. And I feel like we are not in a me world right now. I mean, there are people who are in a me world right now, but in the sports world, It's a we. We, as a society, that's what's going on here. And when you are in a clubhouse, whether it's one person who's African-American in your clubhouse, which is what the White Sox situation is, Tim Anderson, or five or six or whatever, or a basketball team that has mostly African-Americans, they are your teammates. And when you have a teammate, a brother, who is hurting, that if you are a stand-up athlete, you should be hurting, or at least understanding that hurt that he is feeling. So when I hear Lucas Giolito say that, something tells me that as a team, the White Sox, in that clubhouse, which is really tight, is feeling it too. Now, they don't have a game today. They don't have a game until tomorrow. It's tough to figure out how long this might go, but we'll see what happens. Maybe they do decide to boycott tomorrow's game because they had a day game yesterday. They're off today, not back until tomorrow. So we'll find out. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if they decided to do it, but you never know. This story is changing seemingly by the hour.
Chuck, based on what you said, were you critical at all of what the Cubs did yesterday by playing and Jason Hayward was hurting?
So here's the thing with that. Like, in our Twitter world, people want to do hot takes and react right away. And there was a lot of instant reaction, and that gets me. We don't live in a black and white world sometimes. There is gray here. It's not as simple as he's hurting, why did they play? And everyone was jumping to a conclusion saying, what's up with the Cubs? But then the game ended, and we know a little bit more information that, you know, Jason asked his players. They told him, like, hey, you guys go ahead and play. Some of them did not want to play. This is complicated. And who am I to tell a team what they should or should not do? I don't want to play in those waters. I can just say that I can just observe what has happened. And, you know, I don't want to speak for Cubs players who decide to play or not play. But, you know, I think there's more to that story than that. These are tough issues that we're dealing with here. And I don't want to judge an entire team, entire franchise over a decision over this, because there's so much more to it than just play or not play.
Really good stuff, Chuck. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.
All right.
There you go. There's Chuck Garfine, NBC Sports Chicago, on the Corona Hotline. I want to play you. The commissioner of baseball is under fire again. Will this be something that could force him to lose his job? We will play you the audio that everyone is talking about next.
Brought to you by Trend Micro Cloud One, the world's leading security services platform for cloud builders. Visit trendmicro.com/ESPN for more info.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
All right, so the Mets general manager, Brody Van Wagenen, spoke today. It's a weird video because isn't he a little bit off mic here?
No, he's completely off mic because the video is of him not during the press conference. It's talking to reporters, you know, just you and me type of thing. This doesn't leave this room, but there was a camera on. So it picks him up, but it's not the audio is not a mic in his face. Does that make sense?
Let me ask you a real quick question before you play this.
Yeah.
You had to know that there was a chance. If you're going to engage with the media and tell them this story, which is damning as all get out, do you think there was a chance that it could get out?
Maybe he wanted it to get out.
That's my point.
Right.
And he knows there's a mic in there.
You guys have been in those rooms, those press rooms.
Yes.
There are, what, 15 different cameras, television cameras?
Yes.
There's all the mics. There's...
And the mic is on.
Haven't baseball people learned in the last week that the mic is always on?
Yeah, right.
And so listen, phones can record anything that is said these days, too.
Right.
So this listening was filmed, right now.
And then the audio picks it up. Is the audio... we could hear everything, right?
So I boosted the audio here. So if the quality is not great, it's because this is max boosted on our end, okay? Because if you watch it online, you're not going to really be able to tell what he's saying. So you have to boost it digitally, okay?
And he's talking about the commissioner and what the commissioner wanted the Mets to do today, correct?
Correct, yes. Okay, here's the audio.
They're mulling that over. Baseball's trying to come up with a solution, saying, "Oh, you know, it'd be super powerful." Three of us here can't leave this room. They're saying, "You know, it'd be really great if you just have them all take the field." Then they leave the field, and then they come back and play at 8:10. And I was like, "What? What's it, Rob?" Because Jeff, scheduling's gonna be a nightmare. There's so much at stake, and I said, "Jeff, that's not happening.
They're not dealing with reality.
They're not playing, but that's Rob's instinct. And Rob, not exactly what you are, but at leadership level, he doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it." And
that's so...
Anyway, so we're waiting. Jeff wants to hear, as soon as we hear from the Marlins, Conforto, whatever we do, we need to coordinate with the Marlins. So as soon as Conforto hears from Rojas...
The management level, he just doesn't get it, he says, about Rob Manfred. And if you missed the audio, he said that they wanted him to take the field, leave the field, and then come back and play an hour later. And he told them, "Rob, we can't do that."
I mean, that. How do you as a player trust that that person has your best interest in mind? Not that you didn't doubt that before, but...
That's a staged circus. You know, that's not anything... So we'll see. And he did say in there that there's between the three of us and it doesn't leave this room, correct?
Yeah, sure.
But now Passan and Keith Olbermann from ESPN is demanding that that he resigns tonight. We'll see. We'll see what happens here. Baseball has a storm.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they
do. So, and
at this point, trust is maybe the most important commodity there is in sports between players and owners.
How do you think the players are going to respond to this?
They're not going to be happy about it. And you guys will talk about it on the baseball show tonight, correct?
Yeah. we're going to talk about it. And also, Jesse's coming up in about 7 minutes because he's been following all the different Zoom calls around baseball today and kind of round up with us what's going on with Major League Baseball, with everything that took place yesterday, and then heading into tonight's action.
It was really surreal. I didn't tell you guys this, that Jesse came over to watch the Cubs game yesterday.
Right.
And we started eating at around like 6:20. And then by like 6:45, 6:50, he left to go to Milwaukee.
He didn't like your company.
Oh. Yeah.
Mason was taunting him about the White Sox.
The kids were around him, and then the next thing you know, Jesse's on SportsCenter at 10.
That's unbelievable.
You know, it was a surreal night.
By the way, is tomorrow your last treatment?
1 week from tomorrow.
1 week from tomorrow.
I'm
okay.
Taking a breath tomorrow.
Okay.
A summer breath.
Just wanted to make sure if tomorrow was the day that, you know, you heard from all of us. So.
Yeah. 1 week from tomorrow, my final treatment.
Okay.
So
countdown is on, my friend.
It is. Great job by Black and Abdallah. They're coming up in 2 minutes. Thank you to Chuck Garfine and Michael Wilbon. For Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a safe and healthy Thursday night.
That was a big threat.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No high from you.
What?
No high from you.
And give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all.